Love United, hate Glazer. Love winning 6-2. Love our fans getting together and getting high-profile matches cancelled, demonstrating the power of fan protest.
You're not on the same page as the broadcasters, Paul. This was hooligans rioting. And we're not talking about the message of the protest now. We're just talking about the rioters.
You see, you're...
Isn't that what we're supposed to be talking about?
No, Ed, you see, you've made the terrible mistake of moving to a different country. Or indeed, if you'd been in this country listening to the BBC. Because somehow, Sky Sports, in spite of the best efforts of Dave Jones and Graham Souness, gave vast amounts of airtime to Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher, basically saying, no, this is good. So it was absolutely extraordinary. I mean, of course, there was the, you know, like, so let's set the scene. We're recording this at 6:30, which I guess is when we would have been recording anyway, because the match would just have finished. What we know so far is that a vast majority peaceful, non-violent protest took place at Old Trafford. The exit to the Lowry was blocked for a long time, although it'd been clear for a good couple of hours by about 5 o'clock, apparently. That can't be right. But anyway, then there was a group of fans, obviously, that got inside Old Trafford. There were people that got into the building, but lots of people on the pitch. There were a few scuffles once police started to push protesters back.
Well, that's always the way, isn't it? Protesters are peaceful until the fuzz turn up.
Yeah, well, yeah, quite.
Yeah, basically.
Yes, absolutely. Other than a few bottles being lamped at police people, and it's my favourite thing about all this, there was this little rumour going around that they're smashing up Sky cameras inside the building, inside Old Trafford, and I think Sky probably would have made quite a big deal out of that if that had actually happened. What I have seen is footage of somebody yeeting a tripod over a barricade. It's like, yeah, all right. I don't think that's smashing up Sky cameras, is it? People mistaking...
The tripod, quite cheap. The lenses, about £200,000.
Yeah, exactly.
On those broadcast lenses.
But guess what? Sky probably not got them all dotted around from 2 o'clock in the afternoon. They're probably bringing them out and sticking them on as they get ready to go to air. But anyway, you know, there's going to be so much hand-wringing. I've seen it. United fans, of course, nothing happens without huge division among supporters.
Sure.
I think what we should, I mean, what I would think would be a very valuable use of some of the time in this podcast is to perhaps re-explain some of the stuff around why these protests are happening in the context of the Glazer ownership. Maybe also discuss the fact that if protests aren't inconvenient, they don't do anything.
Well, yes, true. I mean, I don't know how much of the story we need to reiterate, because I imagine most of the audience, if they're still with us after the past year, and some aren't, for various reasons, but if they're still with us, most of the audience are pretty familiar. But, you know, there's two things to it, aren't there, that we need to remember. One is the kind of underlying, dissatisfaction, or is that the right word, with the Glazer ownership, you know, and that started before they had even taken over, and then the second thing is the sort of stimulus, the catalyst, or the accelerant of the Super League plans, which, you know, brought to the fore the hyper vulture capitalism of the Glazer family and their desire to wring as much out of this asset as they possibly can, you know, and this is completely divergent from the history of English football and the values that most of English football holds, or football
European,
actually around the world.
Yeah, European football,
yeah. And we've seen protests before, of course, you know, on the takeover 2005, when the bonds were first issued in 2010, and these kind of, you know, events have stimulated greater protests. The underlying thing is there always, and you know, we've noticed over the last couple of weeks the green gold has been out again with the flares and the smoke, and that's a message, you know, co-opted, as you so right rightfully mentioned on last week's show, co-opted by some groups. Fans are very dissatisfied. We've seen protests to a different scale, a huge one at Arsenal. They are also dissatisfied with their owners because they've not been very successful, a bit of a joke of a club. Well, just generally, but especially over the last sort of 10 years or so. Protests at Chelsea, they're not dissatisfied with their owner. They've got, you know, the sort of benevolent dictator ownership model, which is probably the best one for football, you know, for various different reasons. But they recognise the, you know, the dangerous thing that the Super League represented. So, you know, that's all the context for today. This was supposed to be the organised protest, last week being the fan cam protest. Sorry, I'm being facetious.
Yeah, it wasn't. That's not what it was at all. Last week was. It's annoying. It's the stupid, snidey. I don't mean you, but the stupid, snidey, smug, divisive nonsense. Like, no, it wasn't. It was a group of people who were extremely upset about what was happening to their club, gathering to protest outside Old Trafford because there was an opportunity to do so. Like, that's...
We're the fan cabs. My tongue is in my cheek, folks.
What's the point, though? Like, what's the point? Why does it always have to degenerate into cynicism? Like, it happens absolutely everywhere, all the time.
You missed the tone, Paul.
No, I didn't. So I heard it. Like, it was... It's literally what I'm objecting to.
All right. And this week being the one that was organised by various groups.
Yeah.
And... So the larger one, and it's very hard to keep fans on one page, you know.
Yeah.
And so the organized protest with the banners and stuff was one thing. I don't think the decision to storm the barricades and such as they were, about three stewards and some red fencing and break into Old Trafford. Well documented that there hasn't been an awful lot spent on Old Trafford over the years.
Yeah.
Probably not that hard to kick down a few mouldy wooden doors, as they did in the three places, and get into the ground, you know. And Laurie Whitwell on Twitter, not involved in the protests against social media, apparently, the Athletic's Laurie Whitwell, saying that one of the major reasons why they couldn't play the game is because fans stole all the balls. And there weren't any COVID-safe balls left. It's like a non-league team, isn't it? You know, they boost it over the fence and they're like, can we have our ball back, please?
It was very enjoyable. Yeah, friend of the show, Carl Anker, also of The Athletic, was there in the protest and did some brilliant coverage of it. So definitely worth checking out his Twitter feed for...
Did he get on the pitch?
I'm not sure he joined that part of the thing. I mean, there is a sort of...
40% off the Athletic subscription and live footage from the pitch. He's taken the penalty spot home, hasn't he?
There's some sort of... This is really interesting. Like, what's one of the things that is a bit upsetting about this is I'm sure that the club will absolutely throw the book at the people that got into Old Trafford. Like, when they can identify some of those people, there'll be lifetime bans, there'll be all that kind of stuff. And we should be protesting those consequences as well. But when it was happening, as it was happening, I do always think this is not a criticism of this protest or what was done on this protest. I just do think there's a sort of fascinating psychological phenomenon where people completely forget consequence. Like, when they are in, there's a kind of perceived safety of, this is what a very literal mob mentality, right? That you, when you're inside the mob, you feel completely inviolable. But unfortunately, I suspect there's going to be consequences for some of the people that, and I really hope that there's a minimal consequences. I really hope that there's minimal capacity to identify the people that did this. And
the capacity will be quite high because all the broadcasters had their cameras on
and they were photographing
the kids stealing the corner flags.
All the protesters also had their cameras on, to be fair. So, you know.
Identifying themselves, yeah. Yes, it was interesting. I live in the Pacific Northwest now, and so we have NBC coverage of the Premier League here. Their tone was interesting because they don't have a Gary Neville or a Jamie Carragher. That's more a voice of the fans, and the tone was sort of, you know, the message is now being lost, and it's all about the the rioting, quote unquote. But
rioting.
I know. Quote unquote. Yeah. They showed a lot of the FanCon coverage, which they stole from social media, and they didn't credit any of the people. Now, I don't know that's because they wanted to protect the identities, or they were just stealing the footage and didn't want to pay for the rights.
Yeah, quite. I mean, I think that's built into the terms and conditions of the platforms that the people shared the thing on. More of. I guess we'll have some discussion about those platforms a little later in the show. I mean, one of the things that's interesting is the idea that the message didn't get... I mean, this probably was because of Carragher and Neville, but there was 2.5 hours of conversation on Sky about the Glazer ownership. And that's actually just the reason I wanted to just very briefly touch on some of the history, because I'm sure this doesn't really apply to many people listening to this show, but there are literally broadcasters... you know, Graham Souness is unchallenged on Sky when he talks... genuine, this is not partisanship, he's talking absolute rubbish. He's talking about the amount of money the Glazers have invested in transfers, when everyone listening to this show and every United fan who knows anything about this knows that the Glazers haven't invested a single penny of money. They have spent some of the money that the club makes, and that's it. And they've taken out vast fortunes for themselves. They bought the club with leveraged debt. Like, what that means is club Manchester United, from when, what's his name, Gibson took over and cleared the debts, all the way through to 2005, United ran without, from I think 1930-something to 1905, ran to 2005, ran with no debt, and then suddenly had three quarters of £1 billion worth of debt leveraged onto the club.
They still have about 550 gross debt at the moment, by the way.
Yeah, right.
So, look, debt, I mean, I'm... sorry, going on a tangent, as we like to do on the show. Look, debt isn't bad per se, because it can be used for something productive. Tottenham have a lot of debt, but they've now built one of the finest stadiums in Europe. They've got a team in it, and no fans in there, but they've got this thing that will be of benefit to the club for many years, presumably, or they hope. United haven't got anything for all that money that's leaked out in debt repayments or interest repayments, fees to the Glazers, dividends to the Glazers, nothing for it at all. You know, the cost of having the Glazers as owners is something like 1.5. Some of the banners say a bigger number, but whatever. You know, once you get to a billion, what difference does it make?
Yeah.
So and it's caused untold damage, and a lot of the debate about ownership. You know, I see this sort of, you know, snarky commentary from some folks in the media saying, well, all fans want... oh, this is Gary Lineker, who I think has not covered himself in glory through this period, said something along the lines... thanks for your cup final tickets a few years ago, Gaz, but... but, you know, got to push back a little bit on his tone here, because, you know, he basically suggested all fans want is a billionaire to come in and spend loads of money. And of course, there are some fans who definitely want that, you know, but there's more nuance to it. And United, given the club's massive fan base and appeal to brands and so on, could be perfectly sustainable and, you know, just about the third richest or in third, you know, most revenue generating club in Europe, and probably the most profitable, if that debt wasn't on there and we had owners that that, you know, either through fans or a conglomerate or a benevolent dictator that focused on the club's goals first and not their profit, you know. So we can all see what the club could be and the damage that's being caused, you know, for the benefit of having the Glazers as owners.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, one of the other things is that's done the rounds quite a lot today, and Souness says this, and then you see it get picked up on social media, often by fans of rival clubs, that United's fans wouldn't be doing this if we were winning. And it's like, in 2005, we were 6 years away from, you know, we were going to win the European Cup again in 3 years after that, but we're only 6 years away from winning the treble, like, and we'd won two league titles or maybe even three between then and that time. So I think two. Anyway, the point being that people left the club to start a new club. That's the extent of how upset people were. This isn't about success. In 2010, the biggest protest that there's been against the Glazers from then till today happened in a European quarterfinal. We won 6-2 on aggregate. Like, talking of which, 6-2 on aggregate, European ties, very fashionable these days. But the point being, like, it's complete nonsense that United's anger with the Glazer family is entirely based on the relationship between the club and success.
Sure. And then, look, there's some nuance there. If the, and they won't, by the way, but it, you know, let's go for an extreme hypothetical. If the Glazer family, you know, put the thumbs up or greenlit a whole bunch of spending this summer, of course, the narrative might change a little bit. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. If Erling Haaland turns up at Old Trafford, we'll be talking about that. And of course, that factors into how big the protests could get, or, you know, the stimulus for it, because it's hard to sustain that kind of movement. But you can see the underlying dissatisfaction. People understand the damage that has been caused to this club. You know, you only need to go to Old Trafford to see the leaky roofs to understand some of it. It's not just about what's on the pitch. And Gary Neville said it in his Sky commentary earlier. Yeah, they showed a clip of it where he's saying, you know, it might look nice from the perspective of the cameras right now, but look around and the place is old, you know.
Which was good.
Investment has not... And Carrington is not in the top 10 of training grounds. You know, players, prospective players, agents, all like, well, this feels a bit quaint, doesn't it? Because it's not at that kind of elite super club level. And the investment off the pitch and the investment on it to a different degree have not been what it could be without, you know, the Glazers as owners.
Yeah. And, you know, it was good that Neville said that, because that was another one of the nonsense points that Souness spouted. He, you know, they're sat on their little platform that they've got inside the stadium now so they can do sort of social distance stuff. And they, you know, he was looking around going, you know, this place, what they've spent on this place. Like, somebody show him the numbers, what they've spent on this place. Somebody show him that clip of the roof leaking last season. Like, what they've spent on that place, nowhere near the money that needs spending on it to make it anything like a kind of 21st century elite club ground, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they've done bits of repair over the years. So they've kept the executive facilities up because that's their most profitable customers. So then they kind of have to do that. Otherwise, they can't charge what they want to for that. They had to spend some money on moving the accessible seating areas and expanding that. They haven't spent money on expanding the stadium since the corners were put in, quadrants were put in, and that was already greenlit before they became sort of owners. So, and the last really big expansion was obviously the third tier in the mid-90s. So it's or late 90s. It's been, you know, years and years. And yeah, the latent demand for United tickets is, you know, still really strong. And you see what other clubs are doing around Europe. I mean, what they're doing at the Bernabeu, despite having that 900 million euros worth of, partly because... it's going to look stunning, and United aren't keeping up on that front. And on the pitch, yeah, money has been spent for sure, mostly really badly, because the structure of the club has been a total disaster. And we'll see whether it's going to change with Murtagh and Darren Fletcher in these new roles. But you know, it's been outdated off the pitch. Outdated on it. It's, the structure of the club has been outdated, and because it all has to go through Tampa. And the first and overriding factor all the time is, can they pay their 20 to 22 million pounds worth of dividends? Because the Glazers obviously live off that cash.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, even though there has been money spent on the pitch thing, it's like, really and truly, the kind of net spend it's not that high. And definitely the kind of percentage spend against revenue, it's certainly not that high. So, you know.
Yeah. And it won't be that high this summer, for sure. And it'll be because their Super League plans have been disrupted and they're not going to get all that cash that they were expecting to from JP Morgan. And COVID gives them a convenient excuse. So,
but I think that's
we signed Bailly and Cavani up to an extra year. So it's two new players, folks.
I mean, that is something to celebrate, by the way. Yeah, let's not be snarky about Edison Cavani staying another year. That's absolutely vitally fantastic news. And also Eric Bailly, like, you know, I don't care what they pay him. They've got to keep Eric Bailly around for the content. The point about the amount of money they'll spend this summer is really interesting. And I wonder if the landscape changes, because they've got two choices. Well, they've got three choices, the Glazers. They can carry on as they were, and these protests will rumble. Things might get really nasty. There's, you know, I don't think this is the last we've seen of protests right now, especially with the kind of successful outcome of getting the game postponed. Secondly, and the amount of attention and coverage and all that things that the message has got, that's option one, is to carry on and hope that the protests just peter out. Option two is to sell. And option three, which there's been some little bits of kind of scuttlebutt about, is to try and buy the fans off, basically, to try and, you know, what we're trying to rebuild trust. If they really want to do that, They've only got one option. They've got to start acting like owners that want to win stuff. And, you know, at that point, the relationship between the fans and the club changes completely. But that's, you know, there's no reason to suspect that's going to happen after 16 years in charge.
No, why would they? They're still going to pay themselves their dividend despite the huge drop off in revenues caused by COVID. I don't think their priorities haven't changed. The outlook, I mean, it's only a couple of weeks since they had to pull out of the Super League. You know, that says everything about what they are as owners. They couldn't give a shit about trust. You know, they had to be sort of some reconciliation there, because brands are using United to get to those fans. That's the point. You know, not just the guys protesting today, but all around the world. You know, United is a media property that happens to have football as its you know, primary product, as they often tell investors. And the idea that you know, and fans are part of the product, by the way. This is why there was discounts gained by BT and Sky and Amazon in the UK and from international broadcasters around the world, because it's part of the product that's being sold. So, you know, they understand that much at least. We may or may not have seen the last of the Super League. I mean, I'm sure they'd love to repackage it in some way that's more palatable, that had the endorsement of UEFA in some, you know, way. It's not going to be for a few years. But I don't, you know, to come to your point again, I don't see their relationship with United supporters changing fundamentally. I'd be absolutely gobsmacked if there's any significant spending this summer that's not financed by player sales. Gobsmacked. I can't see it. You know, there isn't the cash at hand. They have a £125 million sort of facility they can use. Maybe they'd use it. Maybe. Yeah, I'd be surprised. But that doesn't change the underlying problem with their ownership.
Yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to touch on again this thing about protest and the nature of protest, because I don't know. I was reading a cricket magazine, right? And I don't even know why I'm introducing it with this subject. But
No, it's good, because, you know, you go to a county game and there's a couple of hundred guys, old guys, doing a sit down protest there every game, you know, silent protest.
And they were talking about a Muslim player who'd had beer poured over him in a celebration at the end of last season. And I don't think a great deal was made of this. It was an unfortunate incident and an example of a kind of cultural blindness that happens across lots of areas of society, and not particularly surprising that it happens in county cricket. But the little write-up written by an old white man was, it was about this player and what a promising player he was and what a good season he's likely to have. And it said he reacted sensibly to that incident. And it got under my skin to such an extent, this like reaction policing all the time. Like, did they react to the abuse, the intolerance, the ignorance? Did they react properly? That's the key. You were racially abused. Did you react properly to that racial abuse? I'm not talking about this player. Yeah,
be the good immigrant.
Exactly, right? And this is, it's this, you get this with protest all the time. It's like, this is good, but that's not good. And everyone's line is different. Some people would be like, oh, why are they having a protest during COVID? You know, that would be the defining line for some people. For other people, it'd be like, no, that part of it was good, but when they went inside, oh, that was good, wasn't good. Or, for example, yeah, no, it's good they protest against the Glazer ownership, but they shouldn't sing, he's gonna die, they're gonna die. You know, that's the line for some people. And for others, it's damage to property or whatever. Like, no protest ever is going to marry up with everyone's line. And, you know, for me, I have lines too. If they'd gone around, like, you know, stabbing Sky pundits or whatever, then that would have been across my line. Like,
or even Graham Souness.
Yes, even Graham Souness, in spite of, you know, other things. But even in spite of that, you know, everyone has a line.
I totally agree with you, and that's part of the reason why the reaction can be so infuriating. Yeah. Of course, I mean, you're not. Your line is normally that edgy joke went a bit far for me. I don't like it.
Yeah, no, I mean,
hacking up Sky pundits. No problem.
For me, like, my line, personally, and I'm only talking about personally, I'm a believer in actual sit-in protests. Like, I'm a believer that chaos begets chaos and violence begets violence. That's what I believe. But I don't think I should sit here and watch these and go, oh, no. They've gone too far by getting on the pitch and scoring a goal at the Stretford end and getting more minutes on the Old Trafford pitch than Donny van der Beek.
Struggling to score a goal, one of them. Yeah, there was a few wobbly attempts, I'd say. I would have quite liked Boyle chaining himself to the goalposts. And...
Yep. I mean, you know, I think it's very interesting that they got the game cancelled. To me, I felt like as soon as they'd got into the stadium, because of COVID, the game wasn't going to happen now. Because now you've got the whole ground and area and, you know, all of that stuff. It's supposed to be sort of a bubble, isn't it? And now it's not.
Yeah, they probably could have sanitized it and got the game going in the evening. But
someone stole all the balls.
Someone stole all the balls. Yeah, they were talking about it. It's not secure. They couldn't, because I assume damage to doors. Although, you know, they cleared the forecourt area and the protest seemed to be over, basically. And they stole all the balls. I'm sure they could have, you know, driven some over from Carrington. It's, you know, 15 minutes away. Sanitised them quickly with some Dettol or something. Anyway, yeah, I don't know whether you have anything more to say about the protest, but we do have a problem with the game now and when it can happen.
Right.
Which looks rather difficult, to be honest. United do have a free weekend on the 15th of May. But Liverpool are playing on that Sunday. So basically, it looks like our options are to shift that game, that Liverpool game, if they'd go for it. And I'm sure Jurgen Klopp would have a few intolerant things to say about that, to like the Monday or the Tuesday, because I don't think Liverpool play that week, and to play that game on like a Friday night or something like that, which would be... challenging from a fixture point of view, because United have Leicester on the Wednesday. Maybe they could shift that back a day, or play it tomorrow. And so when and they might do that. I don't know whether they can turn it around quick enough. But playing it on the Monday would be very sensible, I'd say, from everyone's point of view. And so this game might have happened by the time we actually get this podcast out. Might have done an emergency addendum on this. We'll see.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, hopefully, I really hope we don't have to do an emergency addendum on this, other than the Glazer family have announced today that they're selling 50.1% of their stake to an independent funds supporters group. Then we'll do a bonus show, but hopefully we won't have to do one about, actually, no, it turns out loads of people were murdered and it was really bad. Like, I really hope that isn't the case, obviously. And I don't think that seems like that's the thing that's happened. In terms of the fixtures, yeah, it's hard to get too worked up about it, isn't it? Because, I mean, especially for me, you know, it's much worse for Liverpool than it is for United, because we don't need these points. They're a complete and utter luxury to United. Leicester drew. United are finishing second in this table by sleepwalking themselves into second place at this point.
Maybe not. Lose to Liverpool, lose to Leicester, and it's going to be a bit tight, you know.
For second.
Yeah, for second. Yeah.
Oh no. Maybe if we lose these two games, at least one of which we're fairly likely not to lose, and these teams all win all their game. Do you know what I mean? Like, the league's done, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I know. Sure. So yes, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, I think there were supposed to be fans back on the 19th for the Fulham game. I don't know that it's actually been announced, but it would be allowed under government rules at that stage, because the previous times we've had fans were test events, strictly speaking. Yeah. So after May the 17th, we could have fans. I think it's a quarter or up to 10,000, something like that. And I might be wrong about the exact numbers, but something like that, some level of fans. But I don't know, if I'm the club right now, I think they might be looking at a bunch of excuses not to let fans back in.
Yeah, absolutely, because I'm sure if they're... I cannot imagine this will be the last of the protests. I really can't. I guess that's the last thing I want to say about them, and they kind of can't be. And actually, you know, it's very interesting because this is a direct action protest, and what we have in... This has happened simultaneously with a bunch of... all the Premier League clubs, all the players, as far as I know... teams all the way down the football pyramid engaging in a social media blackout this weekend, lots of football media as well, engaging in a social media blackout this weekend to protest about the racial abuse of players, specifically on social media platforms. And, you know, I've seen a lot of discourse about this, and I don't know at all how I feel about it. I've seen people very angry about the idea of using silence as a protest. I saw people comparing it to the Black Lives Matter thing, where people posted just a black square. And now if you search on Instagram for the hashtag Black Lives Matter, the top results is just all those squares. So you can't actually, you know, it takes a long time to find any meaningful information out, which I get the objection there. I think, and also... I've seen people call this an empty performative gesture. I think there's a very good chance it's an empty performative gesture. This is, it's certainly not direct action. It's a protest designed to apply pressure to social media companies, whether that will have any merit or not, who knows?
Yeah, and as we talked about in the last show, it's a narrow, very narrow goal there. It's not going to solve racism in society or in football. But it does say, you know, you monetize our engagement on these platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, others, and we're going to take away some of the ability for you to monetize this platform for a short period of time. Now, you know, whether football community and everything around it, you know, clubs, associations, players, fans, and so on would be willing to go further, media, I don't know. You know, we were chatting on the WhatsApp group about the mixed bag of media and fans that are included in this, you know, because strictly speaking it was clubs that were doing this and players had, we didn't make any announcement on any of our social channels, mainly because I kind of forgot to, and time difference, I didn't know when it was starting, but we haven't posted anything, and I didn't, you know, it's just a one weekend, like fairly inconsequential in the life of football, the issue, or NQAT's social channels to not engage for one weekend. Whether it goes further, we'll see, you know. And it was kind of interesting, I thought, because I was scrolling through different communities on Twitter to try and work out who was involved in this and who wasn't.
Yeah, and you know...
Not calling anyone in specifically out, by the way.
But also, I don't think there's anything to be called out. I think choosing to opt out of this is perfectly sensible. I mean... I've heard some behind-the-scenes stuff about some, which will remain entirely undiscussed, but about some institutional decisions and some very strong opinions in multiple directions about whether institutions should be partaking in this and all this kind of stuff. So anyway, this is hopefully, you know, my God, this is a conversation that desperately needs... This is something that has to move from being a conversation to some meaningful change taking place, because that, you know, and how you do that, I just think This is a bafflingly complex subject. So,
well, it is, but also, I mean, in the again narrow view of abuse on social media, racist abuse on social media, the social media platforms have money, people, and technology that they can apply to. So they can. Yeah. They can. I know it. I have many friends who work for these companies, and we've seen in other areas. So, you know, after various whistleblowing incidents, particularly at Facebook and use of WhatsApp, and say, I'm just going to give one example to organise counter response to say the Rohingya community in Myanmar, right? For example, right. I hadn't thought through my thoughts, so I'm not being super clear. But these platforms were used to spread disinformation in support of the military action in Myanmar,
right,
against this community, right. So, in that situation, Facebook was absolutely complicit in the violence and death that happened. Mm. Absolutely. And it was, and the whistleblowers came out and kind of explained what Facebook was doing on the inside, which was absolutely nothing. It was in response, they've sort of done some stuff, right? You know, they've got more people doing content moderation, more local language, more algos applied to it, and a sort of ethics council and so on. Yeah, and we can discuss forever whether that's appropriate or enough, or really going to make any real change or not. But anyway, just one example that social media companies can mobilize their vast resources and more vast than you can possibly imagine, given their stock prices have all gone up so much this year, to solve these challenges. You know, we shouldn't have the situation where a black player posts something and it's followed by a bunch of monkey emojis and bananas. Mm. And it happens all the time. And you know that can be wiped out really quickly. They managed to apply their resources. We've used the example over and over again. If I post a video of some Premier League match highlights on Twitter today, that's gone within the hour.
So is your account.
100%.
Again tomorrow.
Yeah, and so is my account. I'll be suspended. Yeah. If I, and I'm not going to, but you know, hypothetically, if I posted a bunch of racist abuse, it'd stay there forever, probably until someone complained. Yeah.
And that's the, you know, this thing about like, there's a really interesting conversation between Alan Shearer and Ian Wright, which did the rounds. And, you know, Alan Shearer, man, this guy's a 50-year-old white guy. Who, I mean, we talked about this in relation to his punditry. And I guess it shouldn't be surprising of someone who kind of really tried to maximize themselves in their career. But this guy has like tried to learn to be a better pundit over the years and succeeded, I think. But it's really like honestly, openly listening and not, you know, saying, oh, but what about this and what about that? And it was very moving, that aspect of it, I thought. But, you know, he was saying, like, do you report it? And Ian Wright said no, because, well, look, how could you to be your job? It's just be all you were ever doing is exposing yourself to vile abuse and reporting it. Like that shouldn't, surely that can't be on the people who are subjected to this level of abuse. And, you know, we talk about racism because that's obviously, but like women in football, Jesus Christ, you know, the same thing, just endless and other, you know, marginalized communities in various different ways. So like this is, yeah, you're absolutely right. You're right to say this is not an insoluble problem, is it? This is an unsolvable problem. This is a problem that can be solved, or at least significantly addressed within the sphere of social media in particular.
Yeah. All right, let's take a mini break. Are we doing ads these days? Can't remember. Or not.
I mean, they're horrible, aren't they? I hate them so much.
They are.
So, you know.
Yeah, well, we may have a discussion over the summer whether we decide to go back to an ad-free model or not. But let's take a mini break. And
Buy any of these products if there are any ads here. Unless you really, unless you want or
down with this
unless
sort
you
of
want or need them for something. Like,
mini break, and then we'll talk about Roma past game and upcoming game. Right. it seems a long time ago now, doesn't it? I mean, everything's a long time ago in football these days, because we'd have to do a daily pod and we'd still be out of date with everything that's moving, because there's just so much football and so much stuff going on. But United played Roma the other night. They did. And, well, they played Roma for about 45 minutes. The first 45 was pretty crap. And, you know, I looked at the team sheet. I thought, uh-oh, it's McFred. I can see where United are going to have problems with this game. Certainly in progressing the ball going forward. It's like, it's the thing we talked about in the preview that I thought was not going to be good. And it was dreadful, that first
apart from the goal. The United goal was absolutely brilliant as well. Like, it just, it was kind of a, it's kind of a foreshadowing, like dramatic, some sort of dramatic, I can't think of the word I'm trying to think of. You know, when you set,
foresight.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, it was foreshadowing it.
Foresight.
A device. Well, yeah, device. Yeah. That's the word I was trying to think of. It's a dramatic device to set up the rest of the game. And finished absolutely beautifully by Bruno Fernandes.
Well, the first time ball from Cavani.
Not his best pass of the evening, by the way.
No, but very good. Yeah. And then the beautiful finish from Bruno, who's yeah, we talked a little bit about his form dropping off a bit, because it had, but that was lovely, and his numbers are still absolutely stunning.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's scoring at 1-2, 1-2 for a midfielder, then the assists on top. You know, he said his goal is to have goals plus assists equaling number of games. I don't think he's going to quite make that this season, but it's still very good. Yeah, that was beautiful. But then after that, it was a bloody mess. The pen, Paul Pogba, I thought, was very funny afterwards. He seems to be in a good place at the moment, not just on the pitch, but off it. They've put him up for sort of media interviews quite a bit recently, saying afterwards he's got to learn how to tackle. He's got to learn how to tackle without arms. I had a lot of sympathy for him, because it's 100% a pen in under the current rules, because it's sort of unnatural, much in the way the Premier League came out and said that Scott McTominay's tickle of Hyung Song Min's eye was not his normal running style. I think that was the quote. Very, very funny response to that, by the way, from Ole Solskjaer, which we didn't talk about at the time.
What did he say?
He said, this is how I run. You got to watch the video, because it doesn't work in audio. This is how I run, waving his arms around. Like a maniac. So Pogba, quite funny in his response to that penalty. And, you know, it just kind of, I think that one exposes a stupid rule, because clearly he's sliding in and he's trying to block with his legs. And it just happens to be, it's very hard to do that with your arms down by your side.
One little interesting side note about that particular interview is, I'm almost sure he forgot what a penalty was given against him for. Because he says, I tried to tackle like British defenders, like English, in the English style. I'm no good at it. Because he keeps giving away penalties all the time. He says, I'm just not going to tackle anymore. And then she says, oh, what did you think of the handball? And you can see it flash across his eyes. And he remembers why a penalty was given after all. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to try and put my arm down quicker. You know, but it's very strange, isn't it, when the rule gives a penalty for something that is a completely reasonable decision on the part of the player. And he couldn't have done anything differently, and yet a penalty is given for it, and it's correctly given for it, because it's a penalty. His hand is in an unnatural silhouette, because it's just, in fact, it's actually him trying to get his hand down quickly that causes him to hit the ball. It's when his hand's on the way down. There's no sense in which he's trying to illegally gain an advantage. But yeah, a horrible and stupid rule, but a penalty. And
And then a nice bit of play from Roma for the second goal, sort of on the half hour, and Edin Dzeko sort of misses the ball and his leg in the follow through knocks it into the net. It would have been quite funny if he'd missed from a yard out, but the build-up was very good, wasn't it? Sort of working around United's rather static defence, a problem that should be solved in the summer transfer market, and definitely won't be, because Eric Bailly has signed a new contract. But that was as bad as it got, really. And I, you know, at halftime, my feeling was, well, you know, the solution to this is to get more progression in midfield. It's not really the goals conceded the problem, but United's inability to put any pressure on Roma, despite having a lot of possession in that first half, it was sort of inconsequential possession.
Yeah, there was...
And you know, I felt that moving Pogba back into the centre of midfield would have been the answer, but they didn't do that, and they didn't need to do that. And in fact, Pogba being in this new position sort of on the left of the front three seems to have, you know, brought new life into him. It's caused some problems for Marcus Rashford, and it did this whole game. You know, and it's not great. He runs into blind alleys, Rashford, and gets very isolated in that position on the right because he can't cut inside to the same, you know, dangerous effect, really. But it's liberated Pogba, and they just went out with the same team. Apparently, Ollie was not throwing teacups and letting the hairdryer rip, but simply reminded them of the basics of their game. And it worked, you know, to devastating effect in that second half.
Yeah, I guess worth saying for in terms of Roma's second goal, Luke Shaw marginally out of position, playing them onside, more than made up for by his overall performance in that game, which I thought was utterly remarkable. I guess we'll, before we finish, we'll talk about some of the really good individual performances. But that goal also, I mean, this wasn't the worst example of this, and I'm not sure it's that straightforward, but I think United's defence as a whole misses Dean Henderson when David De Gea plays now, which is like quite an odd thing to be thinking and saying, although not actually odd based on the reality of what it's been like to have David De Gea as the keeper for the last 2 years.
Yeah, it's actually, I mean, just... I mean, that point is really important, I think. Just aside from the merits of Henderson as a goalkeeper and the fundamentals of his game, his communication, I think, is pretty key, actually. You know, it's streets ahead of De Gea's, and it's a really important part of goalkeeping. If only we could get a pacey defender alongside, I presume, Maguire, then they'd be able to push another 10, 15 yards higher up the pitch, and that would make a really big difference, a really big difference there. How United were able to compress the play and force transitions. Not quite there yet. Didn't really need it against Roma, to be honest, because they were, I mean, as good as United were, and United were brilliant in that second half, Roma were pretty pathetic. I mean, Fonseca, Paulo Fonseca, the manager, afterwards saying, like, we just completely lost our mentality. Mm-hmm. And so there's obviously, you know, something very fragile amongst this team at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, they make three subs in the first half. Like,
it was, yeah, it definitely didn't help.
So Pogba had a shot which had forced a good save at 1-1, and then at the end of the first half, Cavani had that chance where he intercepted the ball as the Roma player kicked it out, and then he didn't manage to capitalise that. But the equaliser, United's equaliser, is an absolute masterpiece of a goal. Pogba finds Bruno, and Bruno pulls off a no-look wrong foot pass, which slightly bobbles because of the no-look wrong footness, but completely wrong foots the defence. And Cavani's reaction to the slight bobbling is to get over the ball and guide it into the top corner. And this was as good a centre-forward play as we've seen at Manchester United since, you know, Rooney, Van Nistelrooy, Van Persie. I guess Van Persie, it's not that long ago. But
yeah. I know. I mean, it is. It's seven years now.
It's not quite as far back as Van Nistelrooy. But it was absolutely elite centre-forward play. And it's just an utterly brilliant goal. And in fact, his second, which is much less flashy, was really good centre-forward play because it's him that's closest to the ball and quickest as the keeper spills it out trying to defend the cross.
Yeah, for sure. Look, you know, not to keep zooming out to the bigger picture, but I'm assuming that United are not going to be putting a bid in for Erling Haaland this summer, much as Ole Solskjaer might want him and much as he might be the right player. I mean, we can talk about whether he'd fit into the system that Ole's been trying to build or not. But, you know, he's another elite finisher that United have missed, you know, for all the talent that there is in Marcus Rashford and Anthony Martial. Their talent lies elsewhere other than finishing half chances in the box, basically. That's basically their weakness on both of them. And Cavani has brought that. And, you know, his body isn't quite up to it. He can't play every game. He wasn't going to play today's game against Liverpool. He could have done, really, because he's not really needed against Roma. I'm assuming the four goal cushion is going to be good enough.
Oh my God. Fingers crossed. I'm so scared.
Yeah. But clearly they're trying to protect him because there'll be a final to play coming up. They want him fit. They're going to need him. And, you know, and that kind of elite finishing that he's still got despite his body sort of falling apart is really important. And it's great that he's seems like he's going to sign up for another year. Because United aren't going to spend 100 million, well, more like 150 plus all the agents' fees on bringing Erling Haaland in. Not this summer, probably not ever. So they're pushing their problem there out another year, and he's an important part of the squad for that, you know?
So,
and got better over the year as he's got fitter.
So, with that tangent on the future of the football club.
Hey! This podcast would not be, yeah. I mean, you know, it's partly I need to see the big picture all the time, but, you know, and we could zoom back into the goal. So let's talk about United's third goal, shall we?
Yeah, that was the
equaliser.
The third was the tap-in, so that one, that's fine. Yep. The fourth was...
the pen?
Listen, it's worth saying at this point that Good Players FC versus Bad Players FC is fairly finely balanced in this tie, as Bad Players FC have contributed, I mean, not so much to the first goal, but the second goal was vintage bad, the second Roma goal, vintage bad players. And then up the other end of the pitch, Good Players just doing absolute bits to kind of pull their weight. But what we didn't reckon upon in this one is... Bad Players FC lifetime emeritus Chris Smalling giving away a penalty, playing a player onside for a goal, missing the run of a player. Like, he just fell apart in the second half. And I really personally have a lot of affection for Chris Smalling. I think he very much tried his best throughout his time at United. But this was an absolute slap in the face to people that say that it was a bad decision on Solskjaer's part to let him leave.
I mean, Agent Smalling. Thank you, Mike. great work. He had an absolute disaster class of a game, didn't he?
It was rough.
Maybe it was just, you know, he's just had one of those games that he's had over the years. Sometimes he could be a bit brainless thinking about that red card against City. Haven't forgotten that one, Mike. And sometimes just, you know, he's just not good enough, but he might be an overawed with the occasion as well. You know, back at Old Trafford, where he spent many, many years, of course, for the first time since leaving permanently, also had his had his house broken into recently in what apparently is pretty traumatic circumstances. You know, and that of course is going to affect anyone's focus. So you know, like sympathy from that perspective, but great work also, like helping us along the
I
way.
I saw some people sort of saying it was a bit of a soft penalty, but like. He's clattered Cavani. I mean, it's about whether Cavani's in control of the ball, I guess. But Cavani's trying the like little back heel behind himself. And really, he just can't ever get his footing because Smalling goes into the back of him. Like, I guess it's...
It doesn't matter anywhere else on the pitch. That's a free kick. 100%. Yeah. Every single time. Doesn't matter whether he's in control of the ball. He's followed through on the player. So
yeah. So Ollie didn't make big changes at halftime, but the whole team came out with this kind of renewed purpose, and they really put their pedal to the metal. Lots of people telling me on Twitter it's not Good Players FC versus Bad Players FC. It's first half FC versus second half FC, and second half FC smashed it. But he did make a change relatively early. I mean, there was the fourth goal, which was an absolutely fantastic fantastic cross in from Bruno to Paul Pogba.
That was the fifth goal.
What was the fourth? Was the penalty? Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Fourth was the track.
Beautiful ball in from Bruno, and potentially crucial. You know, even at that point, you're thinking having a three goal cushion without having two away goals makes you feel a lot better than if we had a two goal lead. You know, with them having two goals on away goals, in spite of our excellent form. Away from home. And then Ollie brought on the kid, Mason Greenwood came on, and Edinson Cavani placed a pass. Have you ever played the game Score, where you have to like draw a line on the phone. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So it's this game where it's on a phone and you use a touchscreen to draw a line in the shape that you want the pass to go. And Edinson Cavani fully just drew the line from the outside of his boot to exactly where he wanted the ball to go. And a brilliant finish from Greenwood to make it 6-2. And just absolute triumphant night.
Yeah, so there was who had the header after before that when Bruno put one in with the outside of his foot? It was kind of lofted, chipped outside of his foot from the left-hand side of the penalty area. Across.
Not the Pogba goal.
No, it wasn't the Pogba goal, was it?
I mean, the ball from Bruno from the right-hand side of the box for Pogba's headed goal was brilliant. I don't remember that one.
I think maybe Marcus Rashford headed it over. I can't remember at this point. I'm getting old, folks, so... these things bypass me sometimes, but you know, that was a beauty as well. He feels like, I mean, certainly from that game, feels like Bruno's getting his mojo back a little bit.
Absolutely.
Just at the right time as well. Well, you know, I guess the only game that really counts is, well, the Liverpool game for pride, and then May 26th, the Europa League final.
Hey, don't want to jinx it, folks. We're not there yet.
Europa League final against the romantic team of Arsenal.
I mean, not necessarily. Perhaps. Arsenal are currently losing in the... they've got an away goal, but they are currently losing
They got absolutely battered in that game, by the way, Arsenal did against Villarreal, who are a good side, despite being, you know, I think it's eighth or ninth in La Liga at the moment. They're a good side. It's going places under Emery. And there's a great quote from Pau Torres, one of the options that United could go for defensively.
Right.
Very nice... very talented left-sided central defender. That's United interested in about 400 Spanish central defenders at the moment. Saying after the game, I don't know what happened in this game. We absolutely killed them. How could it end like this? Because Arsenal getting a late goal there to make it 2-1 and tie very much alive.
Yeah. And, you know, you'd have to say that Mason Greenwood making it 6-2, United a team that, you know, honestly, even if we'd had a 2-goal lead, it would only have been historical pessimism. There wouldn't really have been any reason to believe that we, you know, the team that's won, like hasn't lost away from home for 100 years or whatever it is really going to surrender a 2-0 lead against a side that... but Roma would have given us a game in a way that's going to be really, really hard for them to do, basically.
It is. I mean, they would have come out and attacked, and it had been set up nicely for United to hit them on the counter, of course.
Yeah.
But 4-goal lead, I don't know. I think it will probably feel quite a bit like a lame duck of a game. It should do. Hopefully. Mm. Hopefully it does.
I mean, they'll be playing for pride, especially Solskjaer upset them by saying he didn't know too much about them.
I know that was taken. That was taken totally out of context. He's basically that's Solskjaer's English. He's basically saying I haven't had enough time because we play a game every 2 days to do a lot of video analysis. You know, he wasn't saying I don't know anything about.
I've never heard of Totti or Julius Caesar or the you know,
A Rubicon crossed there by Solskjaer.
Oh, that was lovely.
History cast, folks. I could tell you a lot about. I have a penchant for Roman history. So.
Basically, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has walked into the Trevi Fountain and gone, forget the Roman civilization. To paraphrase,
that's right. And then he said, "Et tu, Bruno?" As Bruno sticks in the beautiful ball.
Oh, it's good. I was trying to think of an Ides reference quickly, but I didn't get there. Too bad.
We're a month after that. Yeah. 2 weeks after. Anyway. So look, Mason scores the sixth and I think that properly kills the tie and we can all book our flights to Gdansk. Are we allowed? Are fans going to be allowed into the final? I think probably they are. I'm not quite sure of the situation in Poland right now.
They were saying on the commentary of this game, this is the only place I heard this, is that currently the situation, obviously we know the situation can change pretty quickly with coronavirus, but currently the situation's looking relatively good in Poland, so... Hopefully that be.
I wonder who can get a ticket and whether I can get a flight from Seattle to Gdansk. Seems unlikely.
Yeah, potentially. We are as a community not letting you do what you did last time, which is you know, the volume, the speed at which you had to act and the impact on the financial sensibility or not of that decision to last minute go to the Europa League final.
Hey, look, going to Europa League final, buying a basically a first class ticket via Riga on Air Baltic. Very interesting airline, by the way. yeah, perfectly sound financial decision. But I had a great time in that final with Neil and John, who I've kept in touch with ever since. Actually saw them in Hong Kong about, 18 months ago. So we only meet in far-flung places around the world.
Nice. But yeah.
I don't know whether we'll all be getting together in Gdansk or not. I'm not sure of the... I'm not even sure whether... I assume it'd be quite difficult from the States, but...
That's not going to be difficult to get from the States to Poland.
But the various countries I'd have to go through.
Yeah, right.
In order to get there,
right.
Might be challenging, and the quarantine restrictions and stuff like that.
You don't think there's a direct flight to Warsaw from the States? There must be.
Yeah, I mean, there would be from San Fran, or LA, and maybe via New York. Yeah, I don't think Seattle's quite small. You know,
yeah, no, so. I know, but you just get a little plane from there to there. You don't have to quarantine then.
No, that's right. Yep. They haven't instituted this as another conversation altogether. Digital sort of vaccine passport system yet in the US. So I have my little CDC card for my two shots of 5G juice that I've had. Keeping me from the plague. I'm fully vaccinated now, Paul. So I've been going around to the local Walmart, licking the floor, saying, "Come and get me, Rona." Not defeating me, folks.
Nice. Indestructible at this point. Man United's league is not quite indestructible, but it's nearly indestructible. I predicted. Oh no, I was going to say. I think maybe you predicted a 0-0 draw against Liverpool.
I did. Well, I was right.
Yeah, exactly.
Nil-nil.
Yeah, well done.
As of speaking at 7:30 at night.
I can't believe we didn't predict that the game wouldn't happen, because top reds are top reds.
Fletcher scores were going on the pitch. did he score in training this week?
If Fletcher is appointed technical director of the club, we're on the pitch. Is that what we're saying? Yeah. A momentous day in the history of the sport. Let's hope something comes of it. I guess we're playing someone else next weekend. I honestly, at this point, I cannot think that far forward. So we have to find out who that is and do a prediction of that game, because it's the rules.
It is Aston Villa. Oh. Who, by the way, were very good in beating Everton yesterday.
Everton were bad.
Everton have been bad for a while now.
But Aston Villa are above Arsenal in the league, having played the same number of games, which is good. It's much to be encouraged.
Really good. Ollie Watkins scored a really good goal, robbing a defender, and used his speed and he's a good finisher as well. So, that'll be challenging for United's somewhat statuesque defenders. Obviously a game United should win against the Villa team that's been up and down of late, not nearly as good in the second half of the season as they were in the first.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a game that you actually really don't want the weekend after a big European semi-final, because I think they'll be mega up for this game. And actually, in some ways, that's been Villa's sort of story, is they've kind of slightly tailed off as they've been so successful. But I'm sure that, you know, having got they'll have their tails up after that win against Everton. And
sure. And it's really hard to give some context to this, really, because, you know, as it stands, United could end up playing on the Monday. We'll see. It'd be a surprise. Assuming they don't.
What, you mean
at least
playing tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
I just think it's that they surely, with the game on Thursday, they're not going to make them play this game on the Monday.
Yeah, it would be the best choice, but I don't know whether it'd be allowed by the authorities or whether they can repair the stadium or find any balls in time. but assuming they don't. They'll have had a bit more of a break than expected, a full week to that Roma game. And given the lead, the possibility of making quite a bit of rotation. I hope so, especially given like Bruno a game day off would be very sensible indeed, I think. If Donny van der Beek can't get a game with United 4-0 up at kickoff, it's a sad situation, isn't it?
I mean, so that was
hopefully going with a bit fresher to that Villa game.
The most used joke today was definitely that these people have all had more minutes on the pitch this season than Donny van der Beek. That was definitely the most frequently used joke of the day. The other joke that was done that did the rounds after the Roma game, which I wanted to mention, was Ole Solskjaer has set up his entire career as an Alex Ferguson tribute act, and the fact that we beat Roma 6-2 is such a perfect tribute act result compared to the 7-1. Like, the only thing that was wrong was that Fred didn't score two of the goals.
Yeah. Yes. By the way, can we just a quick aside about Ollie? Because, you know, I think we do have our doubts somewhat on this show about his quality as a manager. But set this in the context that we all want United to be what we expect United to be, which is, yeah, a massive super club that wins lots of stuff all the time and is challenging for the title. But where he came from, you know, a squad in total disarray after Mourinho, going backwards, 30-something points behind the leaders at the time he took over, to where we are now, haven't really made a challenge for the title, you know, for sure. City could have won the league this weekend if United had lost to Liverpool.
Yeah.
Or going to win the league at some point. If it's not next weekend, it'll be the weekend afterwards. It's going to happen.
No, if we keep stopping all the fixtures from happening.
That's true. Yeah. But so it's not been a proper title challenge. But United are the best of the rest. It was a failure in Europe in the first half of the season. Didn't manage the game against RB Leipzig well at all. Total disaster class in Istanbul, but has put together a strong second half of the season, you know, mostly good results, some good performances, you know, in there, not always. Really stunning performances at times, Southampton, Roma game, and look to be putting together, you know, a really good Europa League run. Should be favourites against Villarreal or Arsenal. Could come home with the trophy. Finally broken the semi-final curse.
Not yet, but
you know, should do. You know, can we just say, like, some praise for Ollie and the job he's doing? He's clearly massively respected by the players.
Exactly.
Like, you know, they are clearly, like, you know, far from being the PE teacher, they are at one with him as a manager and the direction they're trying to go as a team.
You know, and another thing that's worth mentioning is today was the first time that Manchester United fans have gathered en masse, really en masse, for a really long time. And one of the things they wanted to do when they were gathered en masse is sing Ole Gunnar Solskjaer songs. So, like, you know, there remains a divide between what I would say are, like, especially the more sort of tactical, analytical type of fans online and you know, match going Reds. Like, Ole has a huge approval rating among match going Reds, which obviously he would have a much bigger one than most people would on average anyway, because he's Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But he's doing, I don't know how he could be doing a much better job than he is currently doing. Having said that, when you look at the games between the teams who are really at the top of the European game, we're still miles apart from that, except in little brilliant moments.
Absolutely. And some of that, Ollie, is incrementally supporting the team's development on the pitch. But it is incremental, you know, and we have a style.
Yeah.
It's it feels a kind of, you know, sort of classic, it's 4-2-3-1, classic European style possession football, but not tiki-taka. Great, fantastic on the counter, and with lots of creative players have a lot of freedom, right? You know, that's our kind of style. It would be enhanced massively by having some security at the back and in defensive midfield, no doubt.
Absolutely.
But so there's a direction. Yeah, the rest of it, I think, is up to the club to release the finances and Murtagh and Judge to go and secure the right players to take this, you know, team forward a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I did want to shout out to I don't know whether you've seen this account, Maramper90.
Oh,
spectacular visualizations.
Yeah, fantastic work,
especially on United of you know, some of the stuff. But I don't always call out accounts on this show, but I really enjoy that one for what she does.
Yeah, I was going to invite her on.
Lovely visualization of United's passing network. against Roma, and also Paul Pogba recently.
I was going to invite her onto the show, funnily enough, to see if she, if she had any interest, no idea whether she would or not, because I've only come across that account in the last 2 or 3 months, I think, and it is definitely one of the best. That and United Arena, UTD Arena, do this incredibly in-depth. I mean, that person has tens of thousands of followers, right? So
Yeah. Some interesting views. Very anti-Oli, that account.
Oh, no. You must be... We must be talking
at cross
purposes.
Are we talking about different accounts?
Yeah, I think we're talking at cross purposes. Because, no, absolutely not. Extremely kind of supportive of the manager and arguing that they deserve more praise than they're getting as well.
Fair enough.
We didn't really talk about Pogba much. I mean... Oh, yeah. Well, I want to go back to the Roma game for a second. Sorry. Because this Luke Shaw is un-freaking believable now. Like, he was incredible in the second half of that game. And Paul Pogba is like, the day Pogba signs his new Man United contract, I'm going out in the street and doing a dance of happiness. Because amount that all this kind of progress and hope and like, if we can keep Pogba for another couple of seasons, then there's something you could build here. That guy,
true.
He was magnificent in that game. I mean, Bruno was too.
Absolutely magnificent. I mean, look, he's been liberated in this position. It's much closer to the position he held at Juve, where he was on the left side of a three in midfield and had sort of license to roam. He doesn't have to do the things that are the weaknesses in his game, which is the more defensive side of his game, nearly as much, or if at all, because of the double pivot behind. There's trade-offs to doing that. And the big trade-off is Marcus Rashford having to move to the right, where he hasn't got the support of Luke Shaw behind him, because, Shaw has turned himself into Roberto Carlos, but he doesn't have Cafu on the other side, because Wan-Bissaka, he does get forward and got forward a lot, but doesn't provide the kind of support. He needs the overlapping support, Marcus Rashford, to give the license to him to cut inside. And when he does cut inside, he's on the wrong foot. And defenders know that. And I did think he got quite successfully run into channels quite a lot against Roma.
He did, and I think you're right, but it's probably worth noting that Wan-Bissaka was instrumental in two of United's goals in a way that he hasn't necessarily been, because he's given so much space. He fired across the shot from the right-hand side that led to one of the goals, and I think he put in the cross that led to the Cavani tap-in as well. So like they gave him a lot of space, and he made them pay for it. So maybe Rashford was creating a bit of that room. But I was asked on Twitter, I can't remember who it was by, I might be able to find it really quickly, but it was about the comparison between Marcus Rashford playing on the right-hand side and Johnny Bairstow being moved up and down the order for England, and you don't get the best out of him. But actually what I think it's more about is it's about the argument that has been largely overridden of Josh Butler playing as a finisher in the T20 side rather than as an opener. Because even though his best position is opener, the weakness United have is England have in that area is with a finisher. But ultimately, you're better off playing Butler there. I feel like it's a bit like that with playing Pogba at the left. Like, playing Pogba in his best position is worth making other people, is worth the sacrifice, because you get so much out of having him playing in his best position.
Yeah. I mean, that is right. It'd be interesting to see whether they think about, because the way to square the circle might be with the diamond and have fewer compromises, but and play two up front. But we'll see. Oli has tried that on occasion.
Yeah.
Interesting numbers on Wan-Bissaka. He's in the 64th percentile for fullbacks for assists. So, a little better than half. He's in the 18th percentile amongst fullbacks for expected assists.
Yeah.
Which is the better metric. And I think that kind of ranks where he is. He's still a very good defender, in the way not positionally perhaps, but certainly in the execution. But those numbers would say he's quite a poor attacking contributor from fullback. And a shame, really, because if Luke Shaw was right-footed, this version of Luke Shaw would have a real strength over there as well.
But that's the key, right? We lock footballers in amber. Like, oh, this is what you are. Like, at the beginning of this season, we were saying the official rank cast, the official, no question about that agenda, was Luke Shaw. Like, Luke Shaw was the worst player in the starting 11. He's the first name on the team sheet now. He's
absolutely, like, yeah. And that progression, sorry, I interrupted you.
Okay. But
it almost feels like it came out of nowhere. You know, we weren't expecting this from Luke Shaw this season.
No. And so I wouldn't be surprised if Wan-Bissaka, who, you know, we saw last season, actually, as the season went on, his attacking output improved slightly. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see his attacking output get better, because I think it's got better. I think he's got better as the season's gone on going forward. And the more, you know, I don't think we're going to see the situation where other teams give Wan-Bissaka the space that they've been giving him in order to double up on other players for forever.
So I think Wan-Bissaka's strengths are he does get forward. I mean, he has been getting forward. He's in the 69th percentile for progressive carries. So it's, you know, taking the ball forward. But he's in the 28th percentile for shot creating actions and the 18th percentile for expected assists, right? So that tells you he's getting forward quite a lot. He's good carrying the ball. He's perhaps doing less of the Valencia thing and turning back and passing it backwards. But his output is not very good.
But that's not the point I'm making, because that is presumably over the whole
of
the
season. That's how over the whole of
the
season, you're saying in the second half of the season he's getting better, and maybe we'll see a great. I hope we do. I really hope we do. And I, and Luke Shaw should serve as a beacon for what he could become.
Yeah.
I hope he's working on his game in the right way, because clearly Luke Shaw's gone away and gone, my problem here is my focus and dedication and fitness, and if I can sort all of that out, I can be a really good player. Or someone has told him that, and the penny's finally clicked. Cause I know a lot of people were telling him that.
Well, it was telling in the build-up to the Roma game. He did the media with Solskjaer. He was asked about it, and he said one of the reasons is the person sitting here. You know, he's quite sheepish about it, but clearly one of the things that Solskjaer's done a remarkable job of is getting the best out of Luke Shaw. I mean, he's one of United's most important assets now, as opposed to a player that, like, we definitely needed to upgrade at the beginning of the season, and now we definitely do not. You know, you basically couldn't. There basically isn't anyone you could upgrade him with. So, yeah, what a season. All right, so predictions for the scores against Roma and whoever it was you said. Oh, Aston Villa.
Roma 1-1. Who knows? Should I hope it? Yeah, dead rubber that one. Aston Villa. Well, I hope this is we're fresh enough. We're fresh enough to say a 2-1 victory at Villa.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it's at Villa, I'm just gonna ride the narrative and say we're gonna win 2-1 on the break, two goals on the break in the Europa League, and we're gonna beat Aston Villa 3-1. There you go. Those are my predictions.
Luke Shaw, by the way, go back to that one. 81st percentile for assists, 88th percentile for expected assists, 98th percentile for shot creating actions.
I mean, that's
that
incredible.
Is an attacking fullback.
Yeah. And you know, like, when we've talked about Luke Shaw's numbers on this show before, it has not been in 98th percentile terms, has it? You know?
No, except for errors leading to goal.
All right, thanks everyone. Patreon backers, obviously, stay tuned. Everyone else, we'll see you next week.
All right, bye now.